Hello, and welcome to the Field of View podcast, episode 2. My name is Matt.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Isaiah. And this is Lucy.
Yeah, anybody who's listening and not watching, one of my dogs, Lucy, Corgi, is in his lap, so.
Definitely watch the video.
Yeah. Or both.
Yeah,
at the same time.
And share with your friends.
Yeah.
Just make everybody watch it. Just force them. Put them in a chair. What is that? Clockwork Orange style?
Yeah.
Open their eyelids and watch it. So.
What?
You've never... Stanley Kubrick? No.
All
right.
Oh, yeah. It's a classic GIF. Yeah.
Okay, then.
That's topic for a different podcast. Yeah. So, we are a group of people that are passionate about video games, and so we're going to talk about video games for the next hour and a half-ish. So, some stuff that's going on in the world and stuff like that. But last episode, we did our top five games of all time, and this was our top five favorite games, and this is supposed to allow you to know, as the viewer, kind of where we come from on a gaming perspective, like where our likes are in genres and titles and stuff like that. So this is not what we think are the best games, just our favorite games. And so last week we had some other people on the couch here, and we gave our top five, but Isaiah was not here last week.
Mm-mm.
So he will be doing his top five, so take it away.
Okay, well, first things first, I would like to say that I'm a huge fighting game fan. I'm a big part of the FGC. I'm always trying to look for fighting game friends and going to local tournaments. That being said, my number five spot would have to go to Street Fighter 3 Third Strike Edition. And this game, actually, I started playing a little less than a year ago, but because of it, I was able to meet so many friends online playing ranked matches with Ken, and everything from the parries to the trials and Evo Moment 37, which I don't know if you guys have seen, but it's the craziest moment in gaming
history. I have no idea what you're talking about.
No idea whatsoever. Okay, so imagine being on the last bit of your health.
Oh, you're talking about from Evo.
Evo Moment 37.
That was the greatest.
You've seen it.
Yeah.
Yes.
How can you not see that?
Right?
That was amazing.
That's Street Fighter Third Strike right there.
Disclaimer, I am not big on fighting games.
Yeah, that's him. I don't know why, but basically, there's blocking, which you take chip damage, and there's parrying, you take no damage. And basically, he couldn't take any more damage, and I'll just let you watch the video
later.
Yeah. Next, I have...
number four?
Yeah, for number four is Sonic Adventure 2. Battle, personally, I have played both the Dreamcast and the GameCube version and the PS3 version, which is one I own now.
It's on PC.
It's also on PC, but I didn't have a good PC until like a few days ago.
Run it at 4K.
Well, I don't know about that. I can't even whatever.
I think you can run that game at 4K easily because it's old.
Yeah, but like 8K. 4K monitor, like that's
no downsample. That's PC gaming right there.
Okay then. Anyways, moving on. Platforming is great.
Hold on. Before we move on, cool. Have you ever downsampled anything?
Yeah.
Because you don't have 4K monitor, right?
No.
What do you have? 1440p or 1080p?
No, just 1080.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you've done downsampling?
Older games? Yeah, super sampling.
Yeah, but have you, like, on my NVIDIA control panel, you can, like, set it to 2x your resolution or more, so it's like I can actually render at 4K and then just shrink it down onto a 1080p monitor?
No, I haven't done that.
You should. It's good. Because you got a 970, right?
Yeah. So no, I could definitely do that.
I do it with a lot of old games that were on the PS3, and they run pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, if I actually want to play a game.
Whoa.
That's not multiplayer.
Whoa.
No, that's not
Overwatch.
That's not a multiplayer game.
Yeah. You might be able to downsample some.
You could, but I'm sure it's really demanding.
I don't think Overwatch is that demanding.
No, it's definitely not that demanding. 4K to 1080, doesn't it increase the amount of resources you need?
Yeah, but those are not demanding games because they're kind of...
I'm not saying, but like, if you need to get...
All I'm saying is try it.
I'm not saying I'm not going to try it.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Anyway, sorry to interrupt.
No, don't worry.
We got to go on some weird tangents.
Sonic Adventure 2, though. I don't. You played Adventure 1 recently.
Yes, recently.
So...
I played it as a kid. Like, that Dreamcast demo station. Yeah. Everybody played that level where you're getting chased by the killer whales. Backwards down the
road.
Is like the pinnacle of the Dreamcast in its hype
and its glory.
Yeah, when you
really
see it, when you go from Nintendo 64 and PlayStation 1 to that, it's like, what? Like, that looks so good. Those killer whales, it's like, oh, they're gonna get me.
Right? It was terrifying.
Yeah.
But Adventure 2, I don't know, it had like a little bit of a darker tone to it, and it was more streamlined, not necessarily open, but like it still made up for it. Like it was just awesome. And then third one is Ratchet and Clank Up Your Arsenal. Mm. The reason I say that one is because actually the first Ratchet and Clank I ever beat, I've actually played 1 and 2 before it, and never beat them.
That's the third one, right?
Yeah, that's the third one. I've never beaten Going Commando or the original. And so, plus the Ricinerator, the Rhino 3 is my favorite Rhino.
Oh yeah, they're all those weapons.
Wait, you've never beaten the first two?
I hadn't beat it before I beat the third one. Wow. Like, I spoiled it, kind of.
The story is...
Let's not talk about the story.
The story is not the most important part of the
Ratchet
series.
I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah, Clank and Ratchet. It's a good relationship. A little bromance.
Yeah. Okay, that... I don't know about bromance. But, they got a good thing going. Then, next would be... Like, I can't choose between either of the Smash games, but I ended up going with Super Smash Bros. For the Wii U. Just because it's the one I played the most and watched the most tournaments for. Zero being used to be my idol, now it's Captain Zack. He's a professional player, but you guys know how Smash Bros. Is. Flavio talked about Melee before as being his favorite game.
Yeah.
Flavio is a team member of Field of View.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on the first episode.
Watch the first podcast and you'll see. Smash Bros. Brings people together, man. It's like Mario Party, Mario Kart, and Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
Except Matt doesn't play. But.
Yeah, pretty much every time like you go to someone's house that plays video games, it's like, oh, let's just play Smash.
So, yeah, so let's Smash.
Yeah. I personally feel like Smash Brothers is, once you're good at it, it's hard to play with people that aren't good at it as much. Like, you're going to kill them, and it's just like, it's not even a contest.
It's not too bad, though.
No, but some games are a little more balanced in terms of the ease of getting into it, like, for a new player. Like, I feel like you could maybe win in Mario Kart. Mario Kart, even though I haven't played Mario Kart 8.
Yeah,
versus
more,
Smash Brothers, because like I don't technical. Know the moves. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like all the blocking and the res and they're grabbing and throwing.
Yeah,
I don't even know how to do that. So it's like I think that
it can be a little
ink turn, but that's just fighting games in general.
Right.
Like if I have been playing a game for a while now and you're just coming into it, I'm obviously gonna wreck you.
Right. Perfect. But that's what he say is like. If you go to someone's house and it's always there and it's like it's a go-to, but
yeah.
For me, I always don't have as much fun because I feel like I'm up against the.
That's why you get like two bad people that just play against each other.
Yeah,
or you do teams. It can be a little. Yeah. It's a little better.
Yeah,
but then I usually end up killing my own teammate.
Yeah, but there's that too, and you also have the items that can also help tip the balance in your favor, especially in Smash 4. They're all overpowered.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love that game.
Yeah, it's a fun game.
It's definitely up there, and then. My favorite game of all time is another fighting game.
There's dog hair going everywhere. It's amazing.
I know, I'm sorry,
it's like
guys.
A tornado of dog hair.
But, Marvel vs. Capcom 2. This game, also played on the Dreamcast. It was a revolution to me because it's art style. It's all 2D fighters, which is something I prefer in a fighting game. But it's so glorious. The combo system is broken, but it's just so fun. Like, it's so fast-paced. Like, if I can get an infinite on you, you bet I'm going to be having a good day. And I don't know if you guys have ever played or even heard of Marvel vs. Capcom
2. Oh, yeah.
I've never played it.
I've seen, like, streams and stuff.
I'm sure, it's pretty intense. Like, that game...
It's ridiculous.
That
like, ultimates, you can, like, switch off characters and stuff.
Yeah, and it's just... continue combos and whatnot.
Oh, my goodness.
I love it. If anybody wants to play, ask for my... credentials to play online. We'll play. Okay?
Yeah. In the comments below.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wink, wink.
Yeah, just shoot us the email.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and if you want to sponsor us, too, do that.
All right. Was that your last game, or did you have another
one? That is my last game, Marvel vs. Capcom 2, pinnacle of my favorite games.
Okay. I love it. All right. So, we've got some things to talk about today. Some news that's happened in the last week and a half since our last podcast that we shot. So, it's going to be a lot of PC gaming, actually. Right?
Yeah, I'd say good half.
Yeah, all right. So let's just jump right into it. You want to take the first bit there?
Sure. It says PC gaming hardware market expands all-time high.
Okay.
What was it?
You can read a little bit of that.
Yeah. Yeah, $30 billion. It reached its greatest mark in PC game hardware sales to $30 billion, which is that's pretty awesome. Because for some reason, I've been hearing a lot PC gaming's dead. Mm-hmm. Like, mobile's bigger, consoles and stuff. But, there's just been a huge resurgence into, building your own PC. Like, just PC gaming overall.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like something primal to like buying computer or like building.
Building, one. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Buying. Come on.
Come on. buying the parts for it and then just like putting it all together. It's like a, I want to say a manly thing, but it's like, it's primal. It's like, it makes you feel.
No, when you turn a computer that you built on for the first time and you see it light up, it's like, it is one of the best feelings that you can.
Well,
it's
you get that satisfaction.
Like,
yeah.
I don't have children, but I assume that's what it's like.
It's
when you hear that cry for the
you.
First time when it's coming, yeah, you're like, oh, you're like, it's alive.
Just coddle it in your arms.
Yeah. So I was a console gamer my entire life, and then 2009, I don't even know why I built a gaming PC. I was just like, kind of build a PC. There wasn't like a one game that like, oh, I gotta get this PC for. I just was like, you know, I need to. I guess at that point in my life is like, I was a couple years out of high school. I was working more. I had a disposable income, and so I was buying more games, and I knew there was experiences outside of the consoles that I was missing, and so I was like, I need to have these different platforms. So built a pretty expensive PC at the time.
Oh yeah, I'd say so.
Had a dual GPU in it, which I don't think I'd do again.
Was that like 2010?
2009 was 5970 AMD.
Yeah,
it was
back
in the day. Yeah, that card was like $600. I regret that a little bit. Yeah. And then then I recently built a new one with a 980 in it. So I'd say I primarily play on PC, but I still try to buy most of the systems. I don't have an Xbox One just because most of those games are on Windows now. So
yeah, it's true. Which is nice.
It is nice. Nice. It's kind of sad. In a way, like, no, I love it, but I feel like it's great for consumers, but I don't know if it's great for Microsoft.
Well, they're all,
you buy their controllers, it's fine.
Yeah,
no,
that's true.
No, but like, here's the thing, if Microsoft stops making Xbox because they're not selling enough units, let's just say a generation from now or two generations from now, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I'm saying hypothetically, if that happens,
PlayStation takes over.
Well, you're losing a bunch of studios and publish games. Like, where would Gears of War go? Halo, Forza, some others. Like, Rare, where would Rare go? You know, they used to be with Nintendo and then Microsoft bought them. I'm just saying that, like, having that company making games, I think, would be something that would be missed.
Yeah.
If...
Well, Microsoft's trying to push some initiative where it's like, you built it once, it can go anywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
Not just like expanding its
platforms. Also, they're trying to unify their operating system, Windows 10 and
that's
Xbox
true.
OS, whatever. I think they're calling it Windows 10 on Xbox.
Oh, yeah.
I might be wrong in that, but...
sounds right.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's universal apps that run on both.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think it's a unified architecture in terms of its the software design. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens, but I worry that might cause Microsoft to not care about gaming as much.
I mean, I think it's still one of the higher earners in Microsoft. That they won't, like, at least for the next couple of years, it should still be there.
But does the current CEO of Microsoft care?
I mean, that's true. I don't know if they've made any announcement recently, but...
Because Microsoft as a company...
They're still planning to release a new console at the end of the holiday season. Scorpio?
Yeah.
So,
it's
still that.
Some rumors going around that might just be a new generation, or treated as a new generation. There'll be exclusive games for that. That'll be interesting to see.
Okay.
It's almost like a Wii U to Switch situation, because in terms of its time, it's actually going to be shorter since the Xbox One release, because I think the...
Oh, yeah, it doesn't feel like it's been long.
The Xbox One was 2013, the Wii U was 2012, I think in the spring. And
sounds
so,
right. Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a little bit shorter, I think, with the Xbox One. So, I mean, this is just speculation. It might be it might be just like a PS4 Pro in terms of how they treat it, and, you know, every PS4 game is gonna run, or Xbox One game
Yeah, I mean, it's
run.
Still very...
But I think that Microsoft as a whole is not happy never winning a generation and not being at the forefront of gaming around the world. Obviously, in America, they're doing very well, but
What is it? US and the UK.
Yeah.
UK really loves Xbox.
Yeah, but, I mean, Europe as a whole loves Sony. It's really weird.
Yeah.
And then Xbox has never done well in Japan ever since the first one. Which is a, it's a smaller market, but there's, it still counts. Like, you want Japan.
Well, yeah, Sony's still, like, the home team there.
Yeah. Well, but, I mean, Nintendo, with their, the 3DS and stuff, is selling really well.
Yeah. But, for
not
me...
Not compared to the DS, but the 3DS is still selling really well. Yeah, 3DS is
still selling well.
Yeah.
But for me, I've always... I practically grew up on a PC.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I maybe... I played, like, Super Nintendo,
yeah,
Sega and stuff, but, like, maybe, like, 10, 8 PC.
Yeah.
PC games, keyboard and mouse, just feel right.
Yeah, I always played on a PC, but it was, like, my dad's PC, or family. Oh, like, yeah, it was in the our dining room next to the dining room table. There was a little desk.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yeah, it was not mine, and...
Yeah, my brothers had PCs, and I was playing that.
Yeah. I don't think I ever bought a PC game until Battlefield 2 in 2005. Like, it was always just games that we got through cereal boxes or random things, or something my parents got me for Christmas, like Roller Coaster Tycoon or whatever it was. But, yeah. But you were, like...
Oh, yeah, sitting there on, like, a...
How old were you when you built your first PC?
Well, I kind of, like, half-built it with my brother. I think that was, like, yeah, like, 2005. Four?
Okay. Wow.
Somebody, I was like in middle school. Yeah, it was about then.
It was a different time back then building a computer.
Yeah, it was a lot less colors than now.
LEDs.
It was just green and like solid colors.
Yeah. I remember my first computer just had LEDs everywhere, and then my new computer is like there's just the power is the only light on the whole thing, and everything's dark and nice and soundproof and you know, quiet. And my other one was just like a jet taken off because there were so many fans on it. So,
oh yeah, it's very different now.
Yeah, PC gaming, but like just the components, a lot of standards have changed and stuff's changed. It's easier now. I think.
I mean, it's laid out pretty simple.
Yeah, plus
like
the,
really good instructions.
The
and...
tools that we have now, like PC Part Picker. I love PC Part Picker. I think it's like.
Yeah, you can actually look at compatibility and price.
You can see like
the
wattage and everything.
When you pick a processor and you go to motherboard, it only shows motherboards that are compatible with it. It's like, that's genius. It's like...
It's so simple.
It's
makes
hard
sense.
To make a mistake if you just go through it like that. You can obviously make better choices, but it's hard to like buy something that's not compatible because it's going to say, hey, this probably won't fit in that case.
Yeah, and they also, like people like user submitted builds, so you can kind of base off that and all that.
Yeah, really cool tool. If you've never heard of it, please, I'd say check it out because it can be daunting for someone who's never built a PC.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And they just want to buy it, but...
It shows you the cheapest prices, right? Like the lowest prices for the, where you can get different suppliers.
Yeah, I think they'll graph it out.
It'll automatically pick the lowest price, including rebates and shipping and everything. It like totals it out. I would say that like some people are just like, oh, just buy a computer, it'll be fine. But when I built my first one, I did a lot of research and I kind of priced mine own out, but it wasn't on a PC Part Picker because it didn't exist back then, but just in like a card on Newegg or something like that. And what I was able to build versus what I could buy from like an XPS or I think it was Alienware at the time. With the same kind of components, but like a worse graphics card costs $600 more. So I'm not saying it's always like that, but like especially higher end builds, you save so much money by doing it yourself. And if you've ever built a Lego set and followed instructions, I think you could do it. It's like there's so many guides on the internet.
Yeah, that's actually good because it only goes in one way.
Yeah,
it only matches up one way.
Yeah, as long as you don't try to force anything when you're plugging in stuff, like
and no electrostatic discharge.
Yeah,
you'll be fine.
It's really, it's worth doing. It's very satisfying. You said you bought a computer, right?
Yeah, I bought a used Dell Optiplex 780.
I mean,
okay, just hit wait.
Well, it's a start.
Yeah, and
isn't that like their business series?
Yes.
I was gonna say.
Yeah, you can find some good cheap ones for that.
Yeah, it was like $50, and then I put in a ATI FirePro V5800. It's a 1 GB DDR5, and it runs. Pretty smooth.
Wait, you said a FirePro?
Yeah.
Isn't
it's
like
a works.
Okay.
Yes, it works. Also, that was $40, so I got a PC that can run my games at 60 FPS.
Wait, you bought the 5800?
Well, yeah, why?
It didn't come in the computer.
No.
I mean, you bought it used.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
Okay. Well, you bought it for $40.
It was $90 total.
But still.
Yeah, but a $40 graphics card?
Yeah, but $5,800. Fire yeah. Pro.
Yes.
For to run games on.
It works very nicely.
I mean, for yes. the price. All right. It sounds pretty good.
We're not going to judge on this price.
If it works, it works.
It works wonderfully.
Yeah, what games are you playing on it?
Right now, I'm playing...
What's the most graphically demanding game you play on it?
I don't even know. Like I said, I don't have that many graphically demanding games on Steam. I'm still building up my library. So, right now, all I'm playing is Portal right now. That's my first game I want to play. And it's running at, 111 FPS. It's constant. It's not enough.
I'm just kidding. No, that's perfect, yeah.
Yeah, so...
As long as it's above 60, it should run...
Exactly. Looks great. It's beautiful.
Yeah. 60 frames per second gaming, or 144 or above, even now they have... I think it's...
Oh, yeah.
They have 144 refresh rate.
I mean, that's what
they have above 144
they have
now.
One above
144. I think I just saw some probably. CES, yeah,
But anyway,
if you've never experienced that, and if you think, oh, I'm playing my PlayStation on my TV that's 240 hertz, that does not count.
Yeah.
Because it's rendering at 30 or below, most likely, and then it's just interpolating it up, and it's not the same thing. So if you've never experienced actually high frame rate gaming, it's a game changer.
It just feels some smoother.
Games, especially first person games. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you can't. Once you play a first-person game in 60 frames or above, you can't go back to lower. It's crazy to play
I play Counter-Strike and Overwatch. It just feels smoother and when you turn itself.
Yeah, but then you if
it
you
just
play
feels good.
Play through Killzone on PS3 and it's 30 or below, a little.
Yeah. Okay. I wanted to point that out too because I suffer usually from motion sickness from when it comes to first-person games.
Yeah.
And once I started playing on this higher frame rate, I feel like it's less of an effect on me because I can play these first-person shooter games for longer.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe that's something for me. But
no, I mean it's something. Awesome. If it can cause it can cause motion sickness, just kind of stuttering or
yeah,
yeah. Because basically, when you're looking at a screen, I think you're tricking your brain into thinking you're somewhere else.
Exactly.
VR, especially.
Yeah, I mean that's a huge problem with VR if it dips below 60 FPS.
Mm-hmm. So high frames per second,
the better.
It's better at tricking your brain, basically.
Yeah.
So
it makes more enjoyable experience.
Yeah. So I'd say PC gaming as a whole, do we see it growing or do we see it waning? Is this the plateau?
No, I see it growing.
I see it more growing.
Yeah. Because, I mean, NVIDIA, AMD, AMD just announced their new, whole...
Ryzen.
Architecture.
Yeah, the Ryzen.
So, I mean, yeah. And then NVIDIA keeps... I mean, they're definitely improving upon their graphics cards. People are buying them.
Yeah. I mean, the 1080 is a beast.
Yeah. So
1070 is a beast.
Intel's bringing out more processors and stuff, so it's still there.
Intel's been kind of slacking.
They're definitely... I mean, there's a huge delay on their latest one.
Well, I mean, Kaby Lake, which is the newest one.
Yeah, it was delayed. It felt for at least half a year.
Yeah, and
like
then
that.
It came out and it's slightly...
Yeah, I mean...
Slightly better.
Going from...
It's probably one of the smallest increases we've ever had, especially considering the amount of time per price point.
It's
per
definitely
dollar.
Becoming more... Well, you're hitting that limit. It's because it's getting smaller.
Well, are we? Because, I mean, I'm just saying from a price point perspective, that limit isn't being reached when you talk about that, at CES, AMD had their Ryzen...
Well, they're talking about just, the nanometers.
Right, but they had, a what is supposed to be, a $300... CPU up against a $1,100 CPU from Intel, and they were running at the same frame rate.
Well, I think that's just how the price it. I'm not saying it's
right, but I'm saying Intel's been they have the market cornered at this point. And,
yeah, but they definitely do.
And their prices have just not come down for a good CPU. Obviously, an i5 is still good and worth getting, but I'm talking for i7s.
Oh yeah, yeah,
yeah.
But
it's really only for enthusiasts and actual workloads.
Right, but it's crazy to look at some of the benchmarks where it's to go from a $600 CPU to an $1,100 CPU, $500 more, almost double, and you get 10% faster.
It may be only worth it if you're doing one specific thing. Yeah.
It's just sad to see back in the day when I was, wanting to build stuff, I was oh, I should just wait for that new one that's right around the corner because it's changing the game. And then the last, four that have come out kind of just blur together. And there's not, you don't want to get a Sky Lake because now KB Lake is out. You know, it's like, no, Sky Lake's still great. But, you know, price-wise, they price them at the same point. So I was like, you might as well get the new one. But it's not like there's nothing in the new one that you have to get. And that's kind of sad. Like, I love – that's what's so great about, like, upgrading your graphics card. When you from, like, a five-year-old graphics card to the newest one, it's like, how was I living with this old one? I don't understand. And I'm just not getting that with CPUs as much. I guess CPU is kind of more of a behind-the-scenes part in terms of, like, what you're –
yeah,
you don't notice it until it's not working well.
I mean, for a while, AMD wasn't actually competing with Intel,
right,
in performance.
I'm excited for Ryzen. I will probably still purchase Intel.
Yeah,
but I'm excited.
We'll see
that if AMD starts getting market share back, because they're struggling as it is. And imagine if they went out, and then I mean, it'd be almost like a monopoly on the market.
Well, almost.
Right, there are some other.
Well, ARM is starting to actually put out actual CPUs,
right? But I think
that
Intel just has the infrastructure for the supply chain that they run.
No, definitely.
So I think that it would be a sad thing if AMD.
No, failed. No, it'd be bad overall.
It'd be bad for the market, bad for consumers, bad for technology in terms of because I mean, how much money they spend on research and development is staggering, and all those technologies that we get and eventually trickle down even into like I'm talking like. Their top of the line stuff trickle down into consumer grade products, I think would be severely missed if they just had no motivation to innovate. So I'm definitely interested to see where it goes. There was talks of AMD selling, and there was talks that Samsung might purchase them a while ago, but that fell through, or apparently was a wrong rumor. But what I'm trying to say is the PC hardware market is
pretty monopolized.
It's growing, but it's
it'll be interesting to see where it goes, what I want to say.
Okay, let's give it a round of applause just for AMD real quick.
You're trying.
Well, it's rough for AMD because they're kind of going at it from both sides. Like you have the graphics card and then the CPUs,
right? And it's like the 480 is a powerful card for the money.
It's literally
it's not perfect.
Two monopolies, Intel and Nvidia, just attacking one person. Or it seems like that from the outside.
Yeah. So, We're rooting for you, though. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
I'd like to want to buy an AMD someday.
You could definitely... I mean, for what... it's still now. I mean, it's still... Like, the 480. Mm-hmm. Like, it's solid. I mean, it's just... For the price, it's really good. But the performance is still with NVIDIA or Intel.
Yeah. Yeah, not for the dollar, though.
Yeah, well... Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
I'd say for the cores and stuff, like, yeah.
Cost per dollar. But, I mean, the 1060, it's about $250 when it was released, and that was still quite competitive.
Yeah, but a 480 is about what a 1060 is, but $50 cheaper. Roughly. I'm just saying,
It's really close, but yeah, I can understand where you're
coming from. Bells and whistles. I like the NVIDIA software platform. I like their...
Yeah, that's one thing that burned me. I used to have, 5770 or something like that in the software.
You had a 5850.
5850. Oh, one of those. Whatever. The numbers, they're so hard.
Or a 5870, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, because mine was a 5970, and that's two 5850 GPUs on a board. Yeah, that thing was 13 inches long.
No, it was awesome, but it was just...
Yeah.
The software just couldn't do as much to me.
So...
But yeah.
So yeah, we talked about the PC market as a whole. Let's talk about PC games a little bit. So we had a VIP AMA on Reddit. If anybody doesn't know what that is a Ask Me Anything.
Yeah.
So so Gabe Newell, for anybody who doesn't know who Gabe Newell is, you had Half-Life, which was huge in PC gaming for a long time. Not so much anymore because they haven't made a game in a while.
That's still...
Yeah.
Everyone knows it.
Yeah.
It's definitely like a staple for PC.
Yeah, so
if you buy a PC, you play the game.
Yeah. He was a developer on Half-Life. And actually, Gabe Newell, if I know this story correctly, ported Doom to Windows.
Yes, when he worked at Windows... Or Microsoft.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like very far back in terms of PC gaming. Like, was it super important to
it was a long time ago.
To that industry to get started for games being on Windows, which is a unified platform. So, I think that without that happening, it would have we would not be where we are today. Like, in terms of Windows being the place to play games.
Yeah, it showed like Windows was a platform, right. Like a viable platform for gaming.
Yeah. So, started Steam.
He started Valve.
Steam was what, like 14 years ago?
I think so. Something like, I think the beta was like 2003, something like that. Yeah.
So Steam has since become a juggernaut in the industry in terms of revenue. And I would say it's a pretty safe bet that Gabe Newell is the richest man in gaming.
Yeah, as of right now. Yeah.
You might want to look this up to fact check me, but I think that he is... His net worth is around $3 to $4 billion.
Yeah, 4.1.
4.1. Yeah, so that's a lot of money.
He's a smart cookie.
Some of that money is from me, and that's
what worked out. Yeah,
I spent a lot of money on.
I definitely gave him a few.
So, so we had an AMA from him, which is nice because we don't often get interviews from him. I don't think enough.
Yeah, I would I'm sure. Yeah,
because I always think that he has some really insightful. Some insightful insights on the industry as a whole and gaming, not just PC gaming. And he talks a lot about their corporate structure and how it's unique and how like they don't have a not as much of a top down hierarchy. It's like
if work you, what you want.
Yeah, work on what you want. You choose the project. If a game is not being made or it takes longer, it gets delayed, it's because nobody wanted to work on that. They were working on something else. And I like some of that, and I don't like some of that.
Yeah, it sounds cool. It's like, oh, then like you're going to get passionate people on the project.
Yeah, it's like, cool concept.
They know what you want.
Yeah.
You would hope.
So so let's get into some of the questions that were asked to him.
Well, definitely, yeah. So one of the... One good question was, is there a chance for a new IP off of the Half-Life Portal universe? Because there's definitely a lot to be explored. Like, there's really great stories that came out of that.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a direct, like, answer to whether or not Half-Life 3 was going to come out.
Yep.
But it's hopeful because, like, I was kind of thinking, like, there's so much hype for Half-Life 3. And, like, based on other games...
If it comes out.
That there might not even be worth it. Just because just saying, like, the hype, people always say like, oh, the hype is just too much, they can never live up to it. Personally, I don't feel that way,
like,
but I can see where they're coming from.
If Half-Life 3 came out and didn't live up to the hype, it would still probably be one of the best games of all time.
Yeah. That's true. It might still be like a 98.
Yeah,
not perfect, but it's like really good.
Yeah, I don't need the best game of all time. I just want you know, wrapping up this trilogy, I guess, you know, the story.
The next best thing would just be a new game, single player game, like just based off that.
How would you feel if Valve released a webcomic that just wrapped up the story?
I mean, I guess it's some closure.
No, they've done webcomics before.
Yeah, they've been decent.
Wow.
They're good.
They did a webcomic between Portal 1 and Portal 2.
Yeah.
They did a
Ratman.
Yeah, they did it for Team Fortress 2.
No, it was good.
Some good ones, yeah.
I mean, they're supposed to be making a movie. Like a Half-Life movie with J.J. Abrams? He mentioned that in the
I thought it was Portal movie.
Portal?
It might have been both.
I think it was Half-Life.
I think it was both.
Either way, it's in the universe.
Yeah.
I'll say that. Which, supposedly, is still coming. Yeah. So even if that's the conclusion, it's still something. But, yeah.
Yeah. So, mm-hmm. I personally like single-player games more than multiplayer games. Just for the fact that I can appreciate a defined narrative, a single narrative. It's not like you can play multiplayer games and you can have fun with your friends and you can have a good match against some random people, but not every match is good and not all your friends are fun to play with and they're not always available. But it's like, if I can go into a single player game and no matter what time I play, I'm gonna have the same kind of experience that is completely crafted, what I'm playing is kind of predestined by the developer. It's like they made this for me, this story, for me to experience, instead of a sandbox where you just are left to run around.
Yeah.
So
those are fun.
So I love Valve single player games because it's a unique narrative, I think. Like,
and they do it so well.
Yeah, the first person and everything, and the way they do the storytelling, and like Portal has such a fun feeling to it, but it's also there's some really dark tones to it, which Portal I really 2, appreciate.
Like the voice acting.
Like when you're going through Portal and she's saying all these funny jokes, but in like a haha, I'm gonna kill you kind of way.
Yeah.
And then you like sneak behind one of the wall panels and see like bloody handprints like right down the wall. It's like, I love that. Yeah. Just like, it's such a unique way of storytelling, how they do it. And I think that it's been a while since Valve has put out a single player experience. I think 2012 Portal 2, or was it 11?
I think it was 2011.
It was a while ago, and I want more. And I understand that, like,
yeah, 2011.
You look at release numbers in terms of how many people are playing with those games, and Dota 2 every day.
Yeah,
it's the number one game on Steam by like a factor of 5. Like, versus the next most popular game of the, what is it, like 10 or 20,000 games on Steam.
Well, yeah, it's usually like Dota 2, Counter-Strike GO, some other game, then TF2.
The most popular single-player game at the time.
Whatever has like, come out.
Yeah, whichever game, yeah. So, Portal 2 is one of my favorite games. Portal 1 is one of my favorite games. I love Half-Life. I don't even care if it's more of that. I just want more like that. I think that the industry as a whole is better with Valve making single player
games. Can make like a simulator, and I think it'd still be really good.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Portal, and then there's a bunch of games that came out after Portal that kind of had a similar style, same with Half-Life, I would say, as well. But like, a lot of first person puzzle games have come out since Portal, and that wasn't a huge genre before that. But you've had The Witness recently.
You had the Talos Principle.
Cube was another one.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Antichamber. It's like there's been a lot of first-person puzzle games, and I think it's a really cool genre. And so I would like to see where Valve goes with other new IPs in a single-player genre. And just because it's single-player doesn't mean it doesn't have a multiplayer component. Portal 2 does.
Yeah.
Half-Life does. So I think that that I would love to see where they go with that. Isaiah, what is your experience with Valve?
Well, so far, like I said, I've building a new PC. I'm starting to buy more PC games. I just purchased Portal 1. Mm-hmm. So
is that the first time you ever played it?
Yes.
That's cool.
It's hilarious. I love the game.
I can play that game like over and over again, and I don't get tired of it because it's short enough.
Yeah.
And it's still funny to this day. I still laugh.
Also love, like, for me, what I love about video games is also the mechanics.
Yeah.
So I love Portal's mechanics. Is like the when you're building momentum, when you like put two portals right above each other and then you teleport somewhere else, it's the greatest feeling in the world.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and when you're when you fling and then you get the sound, and like if you're wearing headphones and it's like the air rushing past you, like it feels good.
It does. So for me, being my first game by Valve, I love it so far. And in terms of like Team Fortress 2, like I'm gonna get there, Dota as well. So, but Portal right now is good. It's my first Valve game, so sorry I can't relate to you guys as much, but I'm getting there.
Yeah.
So
and Half-Life is definitely something that is not for everybody. it's a hard game to play, the first one at least. Yeah. Two is more accessible. It feels more modern. It still is not as hand-holdy as modern games tend to be. It's much more figure it out.
Yeah.
Kinda like there's definitely some. It's a first-person game with puzzles in it. You can kind of see some Portal influence in Half-Life 2, or the opposite way around. Like, you can see the gravity gun puzzles and stuff like that go into Half-Life 2's
little companion cube design.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
It's very similar, yeah. But either puzzles in Half-Life 2, just moving that around.
Yeah. So, what was another question from Mr. Newell?
Well, he talked about allowing uncensored games into Valve or Steam, which, I mean, it's whatever, but how he answered it kind of really didn't hit it exactly, but he's just saying like improvements they can make to just like the searching and also allowing a developer to try to get their game out, like not just being buried by like the ton of games that just spam the library almost.
Yeah, and so, like, I've been with Steam for over 10 years now, on a very regular basis, and I can remember the time before Steam Greenlight, which was probably about 4 or 5 years ago now.
Yeah, it's about then.
And there were so many articles being written that said, you know, we wanted our game on Steam, but Valve said no. And it's like, it was completely curated. You couldn't just make a game, put it on Steam. Valve had to like the game and say, yeah, this is good for our store, and put it on there. And then people said, you know, so many people are making games now, and you can't keep up with the curation. And there were some big titles that were on, like PlayStation and Xbox, that weren't allowed on the Steam store for some strange reason. So they created Steam Greenlight, and now anybody can put a game up as long as the community votes it up. And the guidelines are a lot
simpler.
Right. And so you're seeing more adult content on the store. But there's still some weird things, like they hide adult content behind patches. So it's like you download the game, and then the adult patch you can get in the forums on that discussion page for the game. So
interesting.
Yeah. So it's like Valve isn't supporting it, but they're not necessarily blocking it.
And yeah.
I don't know if that's the best way to do it. You look at like adults only games on consoles, and the main reason is just people aren't gonna sell it. Walmart won't sell it. GameStop won't sell it.
Yes, they wouldn't.
Yeah, when true. Grand Theft Auto San Andreas had the hot coffee controversy where they found all the sex stuff in there, and they re-rated the game as AO, and they took it off shelves on all those major retailers, and so they had to
That was bad.
Recall that game, put out a new version. It was probably actually great publicity for the game.
Well, people definitely got fired.
I know, but I guarantee... Yeah. Actually, I don't even know if they
putting something in a game that like the publisher has no idea about...
Yeah, I can guarantee...
It might have helped their sales overall, but...
There's no way that didn't, because it was in national news. People were talking about Grand Theft Auto again, which they hadn't done since Grand Theft Auto 3.
That's true. It's usually... I guess it's the same thing.
Yeah.
The violence in video games, and now...
Yeah. The sex in video games. So, but the main thing... For that is that Valve believes heavily in community curation in a lot of their content. They said they eventually want to stop making games and make the tools to make games and let the people create the content. You see that a lot in Team Fortress 2 with item creation hats and stuff. A lot of those are made by the community, and then they implement them into the game. So they're not even making hats anymore. The community does, you know. I'm sure they're making some, but
that's true.
But a lot of it is like they're letting the community be a part of the games, and then let the community vote on what is good and what is bad. So I can see them, you know, being more like open minded about adult content and games. I don't know if it's a good image for the store. I don't think it's a bad thing.
I mean, you could just make it kind of like opt in.
Yeah, like behind some type of.
Yeah, I mean, just like, not even like, oh, you're over 18, just like, do you want to see this or not?
Like a special hidden store.
Yeah, just like, yeah. I mean, it could just be as simple as a filter box.
Yep.
You just have to check.
It's checked by default, and you got to like uncheck it to see it. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I think that I would not be opposed to seeing adult content, not from the perspective of, oh, I like adult content, yeah. But just from a... artistic standpoint, like let people make what they want to make.
Yeah,
I'm not a huge fan of censorship.
I mean, there's that huge thing with censorship with hatred.
Yeah,
yeah.
They removed that from Steam, right?
They did. I'm not sure if they brought it back, but it was definitely a hot topic.
Yeah, but that was for violence.
Yes, that was for extreme violence.
Yeah, which is interesting because, I mean, you can do very violent things in a lot of games, but that, they're like, no, this is the line, you've crossed it. So, yeah. So what else we got from Gabe Newell? Is it on Steam still?
Yeah.
Okay, so they must have brought it back. So yeah, maybe there was just a huge controversy for people to, say, remove it from Steam. It doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, I think for a time being it was removed from Steam.
Okay.
Just because.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people just like report it and all that.
Yeah.
But next question is just what is Valve's plan for with Source 2? Mm-hmm. Their pretty much newest engine.
Because they announced Source 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, it was like almost leaked, kind of in like some files.
It was a PowerPoint presentation. It wasn't just...
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah, that, yeah, both of those. It showed up in some, like, data mining, and then you actually saw slides with gameplay from a Left 4 Dead game, but it looked like a port of Left 4 Dead 2 in the Source Engine, which they never released, but it was kind of like, a, hey, look what we can do, and look how much better it looks kind of thing. That was, like, 3 or 4 years ago now.
Oh, yeah.
But since they've...
well, they moved Dota 2 to Source 2.
Right.
There has been more games on it. I think Counter-Strike goes on Source 2 now. Yeah. And then some third-party games like Titanfall 2.
Yeah.
Which is always good. Ooh. So, I mean, it's nice to actually see, like, tangible things from Valve. Because it's definitely... Besides, if you're not a huge Dota 2 fan, it's kind of like, what are they doing?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's definitely good to actually see them actually still working on stuff.
Yeah. I wonder how far they would go by really pushing it as a development engine. I know it is, but it's like you look at Unity and Unreal and engines like that, which are like the standards in the industry. How far if they really devoted a bunch of time and effort into pushing it into this platform to build, you know, cheap or free.
Well, that's easy. Actually what they're... That's a, he actually hit on that. They're continuing to work on it. So it's easier for developers to get into, and it is free of charge.
Ooh. Yeah, so I wonder if they really like...
Yeah, I mean, you could see like Unreal and Unity, where they have just like huge amount of tools, and it's free to use, depending on like how commercial success your game is.
Unity is huge now.
Yeah, Unity, yeah. It's definitely... I mean, there's a ton of games built on it.
I'd say I don't want to say half, but a lot of indie games are Unity. Yeah, it's like the standard engine.
You could just hit download and then start writing a game. Right. If you know.
So it would be interesting to see if they really pushed it like that, how far.
Yes.
Because it's like, oh, you're making your game in Source, it's gonna be on Steam because it's a Source game, and it's like we're gonna make money on this game because you made it for our platform in our engine for free. Like I'd love to see them really put a lot of effort behind that.
Yes, that would be, yeah.
That engine's been out for a while.
Yeah, it's a solid engine. I mean, a lot of good games came from it.
Source 1 was solid.
Yeah. No, it was just really... It's definitely...
It's a good engine.
It's a good engine for its time.
Yeah.
So then they updated it, and now we got more stuff.
Put those God rays in it.
Yeah. And they got, you know, Source Filmmaker, which is always good.
Yeah.
Which definitely...
I don't know if it is.
I mean...
Is it a positive thing
for me? No, I think it's definitely positive. There's definitely been a lot of good film... There has.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been, like, just stupid, like, Dota 2 shorts and stuff like that.
I think most of the stuff I see is stuff that I'd rather not be seeing.
Yeah. There's, well, I mean, the classic, like, what's that? From, like, Mass Effect? It's like,
yeah.
These are my eyes or whatever. Yeah. But it's hilarious.
Yeah.
So. And then probably one of the bigger things is definitely, like, someone asked, what can they improve in Steam? And he said one of the things was support.
I want to talk about
support.
This.
Yeah, it's definitely been lacking in Steam. There's always been like a Reddit post or forum post just saying like, "Oh, I submitted something to Steam." Like 2 weeks later, I get like a generic response.
It looks like they didn't even read. They just copy and paste from like a thing. Yeah.
Or it's just a bot.
It might just be a bot.
Who even knows?
Yeah, and some of their stuff is a little ridiculous. Like one guy lost access to his account that had a lot of games on it, and the support said, okay, to prove that it's you, because you could just be a hacker, send us a picture of your original CD key that you activated from this game. And it was like Half-Life 1 or whatever. I don't know which game it was.
Yeah, it was something
so
10
long.
Years old.
Yeah, it's like I've had this account for 10 years. I don't have that disc floating around because I activated it on Steam, so I don't need that disc. And
Had to do that. But luckily, I had the Orange Box collection.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's Steam. You don't have physical CDs to begin with.
Yeah, my first game was Counter-Strike Source, and I still have that box just in case they ever ask me.
That's a good idea.
Once I read that story of like, oh, I'm protecting that. Yeah,
let me just take a picture of it now just in case.
That's the keys to the kingdom at this point. So.
Yeah, especially your library. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, yeah, support has always been a problem with Steam. And it's like... I think a couple years ago they said that there were only like 5 to 10 actual people, maybe like 20.
It seemed like two or three.
Yeah. It's like you'd see the same names in all these support tickets, and it's
It's like either, Steve talks to everybody.
Yeah, it's either a bot or they don't have any people. And this is a company that has, like we talked about in our last podcast episode, 14 million concurrent users on at the same time.
Yeah, that's...
It's like how many people have an active Steam account that they use at least once a month that might need support, and you have a small amount. And it's like, I always have thought that Valve needs to not just have support, but have great support. Like, they need to... Like, he's saying, oh, we need to improve support, which is good to hear him say, but I'd love to see them be like, no, this is a priority. We are hiring, like, a separate company to run this, like, a full-fledged, you're going to get hundreds upon hundreds of people to access. Because it's like, they're making so much money. You look at how much money they're making versus the work that they do on Steam itself. I'm not talking about making games, but, like, to run the Steam platform... The amount of games that they're selling, and they're getting approximately 30% cut from every game. And I mean, there's some of these games have millions and millions and millions of people that have, you know, purchased it. It's like, obviously Gabe Newell's worth $4 billion. Yeah,
they're making
money. Yeah. And it's crazy to me that a company so big that is not hurting financially doesn't have their act together in terms of support. So, well, there go the dogs.
Look at all that.
Yeah, little dust bunnies of hair.
But yeah, there's definitely that's pretty the one questions that stand out the most.
Was the support or the
all those questions?
Yeah,
but yeah,
yeah, there was a lot. You should go check it out. I'm sure you can Google it and find it.
Yeah, there's definitely some articles out there. Pick out some more. But yeah,
yeah. So what else do we have to talk about today?
Oh, the Switch. There's always something with
always
the Switch.
Always the Switch, yeah. We're probably going to talk about this every single episode until the...
even after the release, I'm pretty sure we're going to be talking
about it. Well, yeah. But it's like there's always some like little bit of detail we didn't know. So we had Reggie. We love Reggie, right?
Who doesn't?
So...
I mean, he's a great guy. He seems like he's a fun person to hang out with.
Yeah, he's very charismatic, if you will.
Yes.
He was talking about the online solution for the Switch. So for those who don't know... The Switch has been announced to have paid online, which is not...
Yeah, a subscription service.
Kind of scared. So the second thing that they announced is that you will use your smartphone, an app on your smartphone, to do voice chat and matchmaking and stuff like that. Friends, communication, stuff like that.
Yeah, everything that
should be on the system.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just normal console things.
Yeah, so we had a quote from him if you want to read that.
Oh man, it's kind of long. But the smartphone app that we are creating will be a part of the online service. We believe it's going to be a very compelling part of the overall proposition because that we will how we'll use voice chat, matchmaking, and creating a lobby. We think it's a very elegant solution because it'll be taking the Switch on the go. You can use your and you've the put yourself in a hotspot with your phone. It's been looking if you're looking to get a quick match in Mario in to whip out some sort of bulky gamer headset. Is a bit of a challenge. So we think it's going to be an elegant solution and very specific answer to your question.
Okay, I see you're kind of cringing a little bit. Yeah. So, yeah. Tell me what you're thinking. Okay. What are your thoughts?
So, for you, you being the... What your plans for the Switch are, you know, you're going to have it portable. Yeah. 100% of the time.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you're taking it anywhere, but...
Probably not. I'm probably not going to play multiplayer on the go.
Okay, yeah. That's like... The big selling point of the Switch is that it is portable. Console and you can take it anywhere. So if you're using a hotspot, using your phone to communicate as well, like to me that just feels really hard to do because I think you brought up the fact before saying that am I gonna have one headphone into the phone or into the Switch?
Or gonna have to like have my phone like here talking?
Oh yeah, I mean you're just gonna be just like dongles everywhere.
Yeah,
just
headset. Yeah, how am I gonna listen to game audio and communication?
Exactly, right. And then also. You know, connectivity, you know, Wi-Fi hotspots aren't always the best, and they're usually limited to the amount of data that they can give out, no?
Yeah, but, I mean, even if they didn't run the matchmaking off the app, you would still use a hotspot. I understand that they're not putting out a LTE version of the Switch. I don't think that that's, like, a mistake. I think they might do it in the future, but I think that you look at sales of the Vita, and the LTE version didn't really...
Yeah,
I mean, most likely... If you're gonna play online on a Switch outside, you're gonna go to like a coffee shop or somewhere that has Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
What if you're on the road? You
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me in terms of voice chat, how they're going to make me use my own device. It's like, why can't I just plug a set of headphones that has a microphone into my Switch, run voice chat off that, and be able to talk and hear the game?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to start a game, you're going to be... So you're going to start the game on your Switch, and then you're going to go to your phone to find a lobby, yeah. and then you're just going to go back to your Switch?
Yeah, and I think that this is a portable system, but I would say a large portion of the consumer base is going to use this as a home console, and that's it. So it's like they're going to be sitting on their couch where they could be using a gaming headset, and instead we're going to be using our phone. It just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. I mean...
I don't see... Like, he's saying it's an eloquent solution. I don't see this being...
I don't see elegance in
it. I don't see anything related to that. Like, this is annoying to me and anti, like, usability. I think that it's going... It's creating a problem where there wasn't a problem. Like, why can't it use a Bluetooth headset?
Why Nintendo?
Why not directly to the Switch? Why do I have to get out my phone?
Yeah, I mean, the Xbox and the PlayStation, you can both connect the headset right into the controller.
Yeah, and if I'm already in the game, why can't I matchmake in the game? Why do I have to do it on my phone? It doesn't make sense.
And
if my phone dies, then
yeah, you have to keep everything charged. It honestly, controller, your
it
phone.
Sounds more complicated for them to develop than if it was just in the system. Like, I don't understand why they're doing this. It's like, I don't see how they would look at this and say, oh, that's going to change someone's mind and make them get this system. Or, oh, that's going to make someone think that it's worth paying money for or they're online every month. Like, no, this is an annoyance and a con. This is not a pro. That's how I feel.
Yeah. It just, like, half thought out. Maybe, like, oh, we have this sweet mobile phone app. What can we do with it? And we're like, oh, let's make a Switch. Let's just put them together. Just some duct tape and hope for the best.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see where they go with that.
So, oh, I mean, and also, the Switch comes out 3rd of March.
Soon.
And the app comes out sometime in the summer. So there's not even like releasing at the same time. So in between, I'm not sure how that's going to work.
Yeah, no online until then, I guess.
No, they're going to have some kind of online.
No online with friends until then.
Well, Zelda isn't online. 1-2 Switch isn't online. But ARMS is online. That comes out in April.
Yeah.
So
maybe they're just going to push it back. They're like, oh, it's not coming out until later.
I almost feel like the Switch should be pushed back.
It feels a little rushed at this point. There's very little detail.
There's so many games coming out the month after that it's like, why not just release in April? I don't understand why it has... Even the beginning of March, there's games coming out at the end of March. Why not just release the end of March?
I guess people just want to play Zelda. Simple as that.
Maybe trying to get some kind of end of the year... I don't know when their end of the year is, but...
Yeah, I don't know what they're
trying to hit some kind of mark.
Yeah. It just feels like they delayed the Switch for so long, but now it feels like, oh, they should probably put that thing back in the oven for just a couple more months. At least get some games ready. The thing that really just gets me is, like, they have not put out a bunch of Wii U games. Last year you had Star Fox and Paper Mario Color Splash. That was their two big Nintendo games, and they were not...
And Star Fox wasn't good at all.
Yeah, Star Fox was not well-received, to put it lightly.
Oh, bummer.
And Color Splash, probably better than the other one, but those are not big titles. And then even in 2015, what was their big titles?
Smash Bros. Came out in 14, right?
I think so.
So then, I don't know. What about Splatoon? Was that before Smash?
I don't know. It just, like... It wasn't... It's like, what have their studios been doing? We don't even know what Retro's been doing. When's the last time Retro put out a game?
I don't know.
It was probably Donkey Kong Country.
Is that the... What is it called? The ice? Is it? That's not the snow
one. I don't know if they did Tropical Freeze.
I don't know what that
one is. I think they definitely did the one for the Wii, Donkey Kong Country Returns. Are you looking Retro?
Looks like Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze.
So yeah, that game was
released. That was the last game, 2014.
Okay, so it's been almost 3 years, and we haven't even heard what they're doing. And it's like they have Nintendo has so many studios, and I just wanted to see the fruits of their labor right at a launch. Like, oh, this is why you couldn't play a bunch of Wii U games last year, because we had all these games for the Switch, and bam, oh, you can't not get this system because there's so many good games. But even, like, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. It's a port, and it's not coming at launch. That's crazy to me.
It's going to have some extra stuff.
I know, but it's still a port that wasn't ready for launch.
It might be delayed because of the multiplayer app.
Yeah.
Because if anything, that's a game that would definitely be very successful with the multiplayer app.
I don't know. I feel like we're not getting the whole story on the multiplayer.
Yeah, there's so many details that we have no idea.
Someone might be watching this video or listening now and say, oh, you guys have it wrong, and no, it's like this, but that's Nintendo's fault for not explaining this correctly.
Yeah, it's all just
speculation, really.
Yeah, it's like we're just getting word of mouth from these different PR heads, you know, even on Twitter and stuff like that, we're getting word, and it's like, they need to just be clear and say, like, put up a webpage that said, here's how it works, here's what it's going to look like, here's why we're doing it this way, not just, oh, yeah, it's going to be a good solution. Don't worry.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's fine.
Everything's fine. Buy a Switch. Have fun.
So, we also learned since our last podcast that, as of right now, there is no plans for video streaming services to be on the Switch. Definitely not at launch. Maybe in the future. So, no Netflix, no Hulu, anything like that. Is that a big deal?
Yes.
Yeah. I feel like the biggest, like a big push with it was like, oh, you can watch Netflix by console, PlayStation, Wii U, Wii, whatever. Yeah.
The Wii was definitely huge for Netflix.
Yes. Exactly. Wasn't it the most used console for Netflix?
I think it was the most used device besides computer.
Yeah.
Like more than any Blu-ray player, anything, right. Any other console, the Wii was the biggest Netflix streaming device.
Yeah, I believe it's easy.
The Wii U, I also use it too. Like with
people just want to watch Netflix.
Yeah. Siblings take the gamepad to the table with their headphones and then watch Netflix there and chill.
Yeah. I mean, I remember when I got my 3DS XL and I downloaded the Netflix app. I'm like, this is going to be so good. I'm going to watch Netflix on this 5-inch screen. It's going to be great. And then I watched an episode of Futurama and I'm like, I'm never going to watch this again because... Like, I've got my phone, I got my tablets, I got my TVs, I got my game consoles. So is it a big deal that this one thing doesn't have Netflix at launch?
Well, I think so, just because it is supposed to be like a home entertainment system.
It's a 720p screen, though.
It's, no, not just that, but it's, you're supposed to connect it. Like, it's a console. It's just like a
little thing. One of the things I really love about the Wii U is the infrared TV remote built in.
Yes.
It's like, without even turning on my system, I can... you know, turn on the gamepad and control, turn on my TV, turn off my TV, change the volume, change channel without using the Wii U, just the gamepad. I think that's a really cool feature. I use that all the time when I'm about to play Wii U. I pick up and just hit the power button on the TV from my gamepad. That's really cool. So it's interesting to see Nintendo go from this entertainment style, like, innovation to, Netflix. It's like strictly gaming, but not very many games.
Yeah. You can play Zelda. It's fine.
You got to wait a little bit.
60 titles in development.
Just wait till E3.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll have something. Hopefully. I mean, last E3, we only have one game, so.
It burns.
Was that too, you know, below the belt there?
Well, there should definitely be more games at E3 this year.
Yeah. I'm excited for Nintendo's E3. I hope they just blow it out like they need to.
Yeah,
we bring Netflix to the Switch
because the Nintendo presentation that we just saw a few weeks ago for the Switch
had cool lasers.
Yeah, but it was very Japanese focused. I think like there was not a lot of Western developers there. You had Bethesda and EA, and they showed off Skyrim, a 2011 game, and they talked about FIFA, didn't even show anything or announce anything. They're like, we're gonna bring FIFA. So that was the only Western developers, right?
I believe so.
I mean, Square Enix is considered, you know, Eastern.
Yeah, I mean, they make JRPGs.
Well, Square Enix also makes, like, Tomb Raider.
And Just Hitman. Cause.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, but it's... I think they're based... Well, they have studios in Japan.
So, what I'm saying, though, is, like, I think that show was focused towards that audience. A lot of RPGs, a lot of that style game.
Right.
Or style of game. So, I think that E3 will be... a very exciting show. I'm excited for Nintendo's E3. I think that I'm going to be disappointed, though.
Just they because... the potential.
No, because they have not had a good E3 in several years because the Wii U's been kind of struggling.
Yeah.
So, it's like, this is your first chance to have a good E3 in, like, a while. Don't blow it. show your cards, make me, I'm already going to buy a Switch, but make people want to buy a Switch. Don't hold back. Like, why?
Why would you? You have nothing to lose.
Yeah, it's their chance to make it.
Yeah.
It's either make or break for them.
Yeah.
Poor Nintendo, honestly.
It's actually not make or break.
You're going to buy the console no matter
what. Nintendo's been losing money for the last few years, but they said that they have such cash reserves because of the success of the DS and the Wii that they could continue to post the same losses that they have for the last couple of years until like 2050 and still be okay. Yeah, they have, they got money in the bank, so they're not hurting. It would take something drastic for them to just go under.
Two console failures is not drastic enough.
The 3DS isn't a failure.
I said two consoles.
Their entire company literally has to catch
what's,
on fire.
What's the other failure?
Wii U.
What's the other one?
If the Switch becomes a failure.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Because they'd still be making, or they'd still be bringing in money. They'd just be losing a little bit.
A little bit.
They're dipping into their savings. Yeah.
They definitely sold out. Yeah. So,
we had another thing about the Switch, right?
Yes. Virtual console.
Mm. Preach it.
Yes.
Please.
Oh, just to be clear, this is an interview that GameSpot did with Reggie.
Yes, so this is a quote from Reggie.
Yeah, quote from Reggie.
Yeah, we have not shared a lot of information regarding Virtual Console.
Sad.
Yeah.
we could talk right there. Like that.
Yeah.
Stop.
What a tragedy.
I mean, it's a pretty big thing for them.
I remember when they showed off the Wii, and that was a huge pillar of the Wii, because it was like, oh, it's motion, and imagine if you could play all of your favorite old classic games on this new system. And everybody's like, what? Because, you know, backwards compatibility, how about complete backwards compatibility? And it's like the idea of that was just the coolest thing. And their implementation has not been the best at all times. They have really skimped on releases, I would say. Like, there's been droughts of games being released. And it's like, you got these great games and you're not putting them out on this store. Or they're even holding some back, which doesn't make sense to me. Like, the 3DS, when they put it out at $249, and then they had to lower the price within a few months because it wasn't selling, so they apologized and took a pay cut. Yeah. And then they gave everyone who bought the 3DS at $249, I think it was 20 virtual console games. It was called the Ambassador Program.
No.
And some of those games you cannot buy on the store and never have been able to. It's like they made these games
specifically for that.
Right.
Event.
But it's like they exist. It's like giving them to someone for free is enough, but making them exclusive. And it's like, why? Why are you holding back games? You're losing money. There is people that are willing to give you money for games, and you are saying, nah. We'll just keep those under our belt. It's like the Disney Vault. The Disney Vault. That's what it is.
I mean,
like,
it makes it a little bit like you feel special. Like, yeah, oh, Nintendo Disney's really
like,
cares.
Oh, you like Beauty and the Beast? It's going back in the vault. You're not getting Beauty and the Beast for another 5 years. You know how they do that. I always used to those commercials like, now, on home video. And it's like the vault like opens up and the movie like dances out. Like, yeah. It's like, that's what it feels like. Nintendo is funny. Withholding, they're just keeping it to themselves for who knows why. I can understand if it's like, oh, we've got so many and we're releasing too many, and so people are like not noticing these new ones. But it's like, when you go weeks without releasing a new title, you're making a mistake. It's you are leaving money on the table. I would buy some of these games if they existed.
Yeah, I don't know what the rationale behind that is.
You're pushing people.
I mean, yeah, people love retro games, and people have shown.
You're pushing people to emulation. It's like Netflix and Spotify have proved that if you offer people an affordable option to view content or listen to content,
yeah, just anyway,
that you are going to reduce piracy. It's like less people torrent movies since you can get them so easily and for so cheaply. Same with music. Less people pirate music because you're just going to stream it. Yeah.
Spotify, Google Music.
Right. So if you're just like keeping it, it just doesn't make sense. Like, it's you're pushing people into
the void.
They're going to play these games. If people want to play these older games, like I think even like Donkey Kong Country, they removed from the store. It was there for a while and then they removed it. And if you're going to remove the game, then, like, people are just going to play it somewhere. If they want to play it, they're going to play it.
Yeah.
You're going to push people into piracy. And once they taste piracy, like, they're going to keep going. They're going to keep downloading ROMs. They're like, why would I buy a virtual console? Especially, I would just say that I think virtual console prices are a little on the high side. I think most of Nintendo software is higher than it should be in terms of price.
Definitely.
I understand that they want to keep that value like they want the appearance of value. It's like sometimes if you don't put your stuff on sale a lot, it makes your stuff seem more premium because it's higher priced.
Yeah, I could see about that on some things.
Yeah, like a lot of manufacturers do price controls on their items, like Dyson does it, so that it's if they put it on sale, it's because they wanted it on sale, so that it doesn't dilute the brand and become a cheap brand. So, but some of these older games are, it's like, ooh, like $10. Like, whoa,
yeah, that's... I mean, you could buy like on eBay like $1.50 or something. Yeah.
So
I can get it for free if I want to pirate it.
Right.
So. Yeah.
So I think that they should make it almost too affordable that you'd be stupid not to. But okay, so that was just the first sentence of this quote, so we should get right into this next
Let's
part.
Keep going.
I mean, you could cut down that sentence and say we've not shared a lot of information.
Yeah,
not
That's shared a lot.
That's the sum of all
that,
of it.
That sucks because they had a whole presentation and didn't mention it once.
Yeah, so yeah.
I was scared that they weren't going to have Virtual Console when they didn't mention it. I mean, they're talking about little things that, like, you know, in HD rumble and infrared cameras and stuff. Like, just tell me about the Virtual Console.
Right.
Yeah. Tell me about the games. HD, I want to know the games. Anyway, go ahead.
So it continues. We'll be sharing more information at a later date. So that's something.
Yep.
What I can tell you is that the introduction of the Nintendo account, we have the capabilities to tie consumers' purchases to their particular account.
Okay. So there's multiple ways to read this.
Yeah.
You could read it as,
we can do this, but we won't.
Well, I think he's saying that that's going to happen, but what I envision for Nintendo doing, which I don't know if they will do, is make it so that if I buy a virtual console game, any system you release in the future, I can play that game on that system, as long as it's available for that system. If I buy Super Mario Brothers for the Wii, and then it comes out on the 3DS, which it did, I gotta pay money to, like, upgrade my copy to that version. And then if I want it on the Wii U, I can either run my Wii U in Wii mode, I think, and play my game. It's like, why can't I just download it on... I paid for the game if it works on all the systems. That's what I really like about Steam. Like, I'm okay with buying digital games on a PC platform because I know that platform's probably not going anywhere anytime soon, and I can always re-download my games whenever I want to. And it's not tied to my hardware. Like, I built a new computer, I log into Steam, I download the game as many times as I want. I really think that it's just beyond belief that...
Yeah, I mean, you certain games, if they have a support, you can go to Mac, Linux. It doesn't matter. You just...
Right.
If it supports it, it runs.
Yeah. I use that all the time. I put Steam games on laptop and run them on desktop, too. So, it's like, it's my game, let me do what I want with it. Even though it's not my game, it's a subscription, but it's a really, or it's a license to that title that I have, but it's a relaxed enough license that I don't feel like I'm being ripped off with Steam. And with Nintendo Virtual Console games, a lot of times I feel like I'm getting ripped off because...
Over and over.
Right, because, like, if I bought this game, you know, right when the 3DS came out, and then now the 3DS is getting near the end of its life, and who knows how long it's gonna work, or they're gonna keep selling it. And then it's like, if my system breaks, no more of that game that I bought. But if it was on the virtual console, like it should be, then I should be able to download as many times as I want.
Yeah, you're disincentivized to actually buy on their store,
right?
Where they're getting like more of the profits.
Right. I'm just gonna wait for the newest system to come out before I buy things.
Yeah.
So I just. Yeah, the way that it's worded, it scares me that they're not going to do that, but they're going to just say, oh, you're buying the Switch version for a virtual console, and if you get a new Switch and want to transfer your system over, then you can, you know, and you can re-download it because it's your account, but only on Switch. Yeah. If they announce that these games will be multi-platform in the future. If they actually come out and say, yeah, going forward, if you buy this game, it's yours as long as we keep putting it on the store, I will buy more virtual console games just to support that, because I think that that is something that's good for the industry, good for game preservation, and like, you're going to sell more virtual console games. That's what it's going to come down to. You're going to make more money, and more people are going to be like, hey, you remember we used to play that game, you know, Mario, when we were kids? Wasn't it great? Oh, I haven't played that game in forever. Oh, you should get this system because you can, you know, people are going to be talking about virtual console more because it's going to be more
accessible.
More accessible, yeah. And less risk, I would say, is the best way to describe it. So,
and you don't know if it's going to be like retroactive or anything.
Yeah.
Like on your 3DS.
I wouldn't expect any of those games.
It'd be.
Yeah.
They could do it.
I wouldn't expect them to allow Wii U virtual console games to transfer over to the Switch. I'd still say they do the thing where they make you pay a couple dollars to get that version. But I think going forward,
no more.
This has got to end. But like, even it's just crazy to me, this quote, because I get it, Reggie. It's like, you got to talk in a positive light and spin it a little bit so that it doesn't seem as bad as it is. But I mean, the wording is, with the invention of the Nintendo account, you know, like with the introduction, we now have the capability. But the Nintendo account has been out for a while, right?
Yeah.
It's been at least a year, mm-hmm. I think. And My Nintendo, right? That's what it's called?
Yeah, that's exactly what it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why is it just on the Switch? Why not on the Wii U and 3DS? Like, I don't understand, like, now we can, because we just came out with this cool new thing.
Right.
Guess what? Steam's been doing it for how long? PlayStation's been doing it for how long? Xbox been doing it for maybe the longest, not with game purchase, but with account. Like, how long has Xbox Live been out? Holy cow. Right around when Steam came out. Like, that,
yeah, it's
that was
definitely been around.
Was around the same. So, I worry. And I think it's a justified
worry. It'd be really nice if they just came out like, oh, yeah, this is what it can do. This is how we're going to do it.
I mean, they should have done that with the Switch, period.
Like, yeah, they should have just...
That presentation. Here's what it can do. Here's the games it can run.
Goodbye. Good night. Yep.
Not, we look forward to sharing more information with you at a later date. Like, no, this thing comes out in less than 2 months. It is a month and a half. That's scary. Less than a month and a half.
Yeah, oh yeah. It's
yeah.
25th.
Oh, ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. It's close.
Should be shipping soon.
Yeah. So
oh, yeah. Wow. I didn't even
see yeah. So it's like, these systems are already in production at this point to build up. They say they want to sell 2 million of these things by the end of March worldwide.
Yeah.
So right. they've started production at this point. It is rolling off the assembly line.
I assume so.
They know what this thing does. It's not like they're
hopefully.
Like, oh, we might change things. It's like, we knew more about the Xbox One and the PS4 when they were announced at their respective E3s before they came out in November, which was like 4 months later. It's like, we knew more 4 months back than we know a month and a half from when this system comes out.
Yeah.
It's like they have to upsell it more.
Yeah. I feel
like Sony and stuff, while Nintendo's just like, ah, new stuff. Just buy it. You're going to do it
anyway.
You're
going to buy it. You love Mario. You love Zelda. You're going to buy it. How can you not?
It pains me, man.
Yeah. I like that they have mentioned that they're like designing this as like, no, this is for the core gamer. These games, like Mario Odyssey, is for the core gamer, not some new Super Mario Brothers or Mario Run or something like that. It is going back to the roots of the 3D Mario. I appreciate that. I think that they're not treating the core gaming audience like the core gaming audience wants to be treated. And I think that's going to bite them going forward. I think the diehard Nintendo fans are going to buy it. And the people with disposable incomes are going to buy it. But everybody else, you got to convince. It's like, you look at last Black Friday and PlayStation sold like, what was it, like 4 or 6 million? Some crazy amount over that holiday season. It's like, why didn't they buy that system a year ago or the year before that? I guess price, but it's like, no, it's still like, people need to be convinced, you know, and need a reason to buy these systems. And I don't know if Nintendo's doing the best job so far. And the Wii U obviously proved that they had some struggle with knowing how to do that. And seeing that Switch video that came out in, what was it, September, October, the little 3-minute reveal was perfect. It's like, yeah, yeah, that was good. It's like, you're getting it, you're getting it. And then all of a sudden this this new stuff, this new presentation, it's like, oh, maybe they don't get it. Maybe they're kind of stuck in their old ways. I think that they get it a little bit, but they get it a little more than Wii U days, but this is not what I am hoping for.
Still struggling.
It's like, I don't know, I almost feel like I want to make a game console because I feel like I've got some good ideas, but
let's go.
But
let's,
I know it's a lot harder, obviously, than we give them credit for. It's hard to run a big company.
No, definitely.
But some things are just silly, like the mini NES.
Yeah, that was just ridiculous.
Yeah, you still can't buy one. People want to buy one. It's like, oh, let me whip out my wallet,
like four
give
times,
you $60. No.
4 times the cost on eBay.
Yeah, and it's not like, oh, this thing is in high demand, we should make more. That was like, it went out of stock 2.5 months ago, and they still haven't made more. Why can't I go buy this thing? Why haven't you just been like, we gotta build some factories, or like make some factories and make this thing right now? Holy cow, we are leaving money on. The only thing I can think of is they're not making that much money on this thing, so they don't care about it. It might have just been
possible
for branding. Like, oh, Nintendo, it's back in stores. And now you care about Nintendo. Oh, here's the Switch. Like a bait and switch, kind of. Like, but because they said that the internals of the NES Mini was, it was a 3DS. I think it was actually a new 3DS without the screen, just the processor and motherboard and everything shoved into that little box.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's not the cheapest hardware. Plus you put all the games on there, and you got to pay these people royalties for, like, the Capcom games are in there, I think. The Castlevania's in there and stuff, so that's Konami. So it's like,
yeah,
I might be wrong on Capcom, but there's still some, like, other
like that.
There's other people's games, so you got to pay them money, plus all the manufacturing and shipping costs, plus the controller and this and that. So it's like, I can assume that they're just not making enough money, so they don't care enough to do it, but you put a bad taste in consumers' mouth when they want something and they can't get it. It's like, that doesn't make me want to just, like, support that company. It's like, ugh.
Yeah, it's real.
It's frustrating.
I don't know what they're trying to do there.
Off just with their heads.
Yeah, like, when it came out and it's like, I saw it and I was like, wait, I kind of want that. And then I couldn't get it. And now I don't care. Like, I probably wouldn't buy it if I could get it. But it's like, you missed that opportunity. If it was available, I would have given you $60 for it.
I mean, that's just Christmas. Like the sum of all Nintendo products, it seems like. Well, I really want to give you money for this, but you're just not providing it. I just, yeah. Money on the table, just constantly.
Yeah. Like the Futurama, shut up and take my money.
Exactly. Like, I mean,
Nintendo, shut up, take my money. So
it's like, that's the company everyone wants to give money to, but they just won't provide what everyone wants.
They just don't want our money, I guess.
It's crazy that there's a company that has such a backlog of amazing titles, like probably the best in all of the industry. Like, Nintendo has this stable of intellectual properties that is unrivaled, and no, I'm not going to let you buy this. Like, what? It's like,
no,
it's company 101, like business, like seriously. Economics.
Yeah, the generation that grew up with them is now, they have money.
I've got money
to give you.
Let me give you money. Nope. Oh, well.
Yeah.
I feel like we're ending this podcast on a really sour note.
Well, I mean, there's one.
Okay, well, yeah, let's do something positive.
Well,
come on,
yeah.
Please.
Well, Rockstar might release a remastered version of L.A. Noire on the Switch.
Okay, I feel better now.
I mean, it's a sweet game.
You guys have played L.A. Noire before?
I have it, but I haven't played it. You'll hear me say that a lot.
Yeah.
I buy games before I'm ready to get into.
Played, I think, like the first hour. It was fun.
On what system?
PC.
Okay.
I have it on PC. But I want to play it.
I mean, it's definitely, like, high marks on it.
I
think it's a great game.
I wouldn't mind seeing a sequel from it. I've never played the first one, but it's like,
I wouldn't mind seeing a sequel. Well, I haven't played.
It seems like a cool concept that could be pushed further with modern technology.
All right.
Yeah.
Like, put it on a new system, and, like, the facial animations, they could do really crazy good stuff. I'd like to see it. This was from a person on Twitter that has been known to leak other Rockstar information, and so his direct quote was that he heard that Rockstar might release
Big Mike's
a remastered version of LA Noir on the Nintendo Switch. So it'd be interesting if that was a Switch exclusive. It'd be like, what? Like, Rockstar making it a Switch exclusive? That kind of seems strange to me.
I don't know.
And this doesn't seem like the game that people would buy a Switch for.
Yeah, so, it's definitely.
It is rated M, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, people are dying. You're shooting people up.
What's, I think the only Rockstar game, no, because Bully's T and Tabletop Tennis was a Rockstar. Yeah, there's a Rockstar game on the Xbox 360. I think it's E for everyone. It might be T, but.
Well, okay. Do you think Nintendo?
Oh, and then Midnight Club isn't M, is it?
Wasn't Skyrim mature?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, Nintendo's put mature games out. That's not.
Yeah,
the, I mean, think like I the only the one first... for the Wii U was like Bayonetta. I'm pretty sure that was one of the few.
Hmm. I know on the Wii they had Mad World.
Yeah, that game was
That was pretty M. Oh, and what's the Rockstar game? Manhunt 2 was on the Wii.
Was it on the Wii?
Yeah, it started as an exclusive, but I think they eventually ported
it. What, seriously?
Yeah, and it was originally rated AO, but then they toned it down.
That game is
because, like,
awesome.
To kill someone, you, like,
yeah,
wrap
it's
the
extremely
Wii
graphic.
Nunchuck around their neck and, like, pulled to strangle them. And, yeah. And they said that, like, instead of just pressing a button to kill, you're actually, like, doing the motion, so they rated it AO.
Holy crap.
And, but then they toned it down
that's,
a little bit. Yeah.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know how Nintendo was like, yeah, let's do this.
If anything, at least they're showing off.
Yeah. It eventually released
the motion controls, because that's what all Nintendo's about.
Yeah, that was definitely. See, that logo has the AO on it. So, yeah.
That's intense.
I'm excited to see where third-party support goes for the Switch. It's good for everybody, I think.
Yeah,
for
hopefully.
The whole industry.
I mean, it adds to their catalog.
Mm-hmm. And
that's what will drive people to buy it.
Now I'm kind of scared because I don't want to play through LA Noir without playing through a remastered version. I feel like the remastered version will play like the PC version, though, in terms of like frame rate and everything. I think it's actually locked on PC at 30, but you can unlock it, but it messes up some of the cutscenes. Eh. So,
well, yeah.
Yeah, time will tell.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Any final thoughts from anybody?
Oh, Nintendo, what are you doing with yourself?
Yeah.
We love you.
We love you. Why don't you love me?
Yeah, yeah. So, we thank you for joining us. This was episode 2 of our podcast. Look forward to more. You can check us out on our Twitch streams that we do. That's twitch.tv/teamFOV. Please look forward to that. We've got some fun streams coming up, some games we're playing through. Right now, do want to mention we are playing through Super Mario 64, and we're going to start Sunshine and Galaxy 1 and 2. So we're playing through those in preparation for Mario Odyssey on the Switch. So going back to the roots of 3D Mario, we're having a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
We're dying a lot.
We just hit our 100th star today.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
He joined in.
Yeah, we only have 20 more stars to go for that one, but then we're going to start Sunshine. I'm really excited to play Sunshine.
I am, too. I just hope I can beat it for the first time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sunshine was a really
fun
game.
I'm kind of sad that we're ending with Galaxy and not Sunshine.
Do you want it? We can change up the order.
No, we got to play in chronological to see the improvements and stuff. But
yeah, I guess
it's like I love Sunshine. It holds such a deep place in my heart that I'm like, oh, I'm kind of sad that we're gonna.
Well, that's what they could do, Sunshine 2 for the Switch.
I feel like when we're playing Galaxy,
that would be awesome.
I'm just gonna be ragging on it compared to, I'm like, oh, this was so much better in Sunshine. Like, oh,
I do that with 64 right now.
Yeah.
I'm like, it would be a whole lot better if I had Flood with me.
Yeah, yeah. The traversal mechanics in that game are just second to none. Like, that jetpack feels so good. That water looks so good. Oh, it's so good. I'm excited. That game is going to be fun.
That's right. The GameCube game, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I bought a GameCube because of that game. I went over to a friend's house, saw him playing.
That's like, how you do it.
Oh, where do they sell these? Oh, Circuit City. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That relic.
Yeah.
Got ruins.
Got that purple GameCube with the...
Oh, yeah.
The
same here,
yeah.
Man.
I think it's Indigo. Isn't that what they call
it? It's Indigo with the Game Boy Player. Mine's with the Game Boy Player.
Yeah. So, anyways, look forward to some of our Twitch streams that we've got. Look out for some more content on our YouTube page. Please subscribe if you will, because that way you'll get all of our stuff as soon as it comes out. And if you are watching this, you can listen to our podcast on
iTunes.
SoundCloud, iTunes,
and Google Play Music.
Yep.
Yeah.
So
it's all there.
It's wherever you want it. It's there. So
yeah.
So thanks for watching.
Have a good one.
Sayonara.